Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me today. I am John Naster, I'm your host, and if you've been here before, welcome back. I appreciate you being here, and if you've never been here before, welcome. We're happy to have you, and I hope that you enjoy this. You've started on an excellent, excellent interview. I have to say so myself. The guest is, well, let's just get into it. My guest today is one of the most influential photographers of the past decade. He's a diehard creative and an entrepreneur. He has spent over two decades mastering the craft of photography. And in 2009, this led him to creating the world's first photo app called Best Camera, which went on to become Apple's 2009 App of the Year. Then in 2010, he founded Creative Live, now the world's leading platform for creators and entrepreneurs. In the past 9 years, a staggering 10 million students have consumed more than 3 billion minutes of video via Creative Live's platform. With the success of his own photography and of Creative Live, he decided it was time to share his understanding and insights into creativity. This led him to publishing his latest book, Creative Calling, which is now a bestseller, and I highly, highly recommend it for anyone looking to step up their ability to consistently create and build on their ideas. Now, let's hack Chase Jarvis. Did you know that there is one thing you can do to ensure that you are productive and focused each and every day? That's to get a good night's sleep. And this is why I love Boll & Branch sheets, because they allow me with their comfort to get an incredibly good sleep and to wake up revived, focused, and productive. They're also the softest and most comfortable sheets in the world and the only bedding loved by 3 US presidents. For a limited time, you can get their luxury flannel bedding to keep you cool sleepers warm, and because they breathe, keep the warm sleepers cool. Plus, shipping is always free. You can try them out for 30 nights risk-free, and right now, you're going to get $50 off your first set of sheets at ballandbranch.com with promo code HACK. Get $50 off at ballandbranch.com, promo code HACK. Yes, that's spelled B-O-L-L and branch.com. Make sure to use the code HACK to get your $50 off. Let's get into the conversation. And we are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very, very special guest. Chase, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. My pleasure. I've been looking forward to this. So let's jump right into it, shall we?
We shall. Let's do it.
Awesome. Chase, you are, I'm going to say you're a man that wears many hats. Today, for the most part, we're talking to Chase the entrepreneur, but that will vary. But let's start here. Chase, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Ooh, you're just starting out right out of the gates with a whopper. There's really only one answer. And that is it for me. And that is this ability to trust yourself, the ability to listen to a part of ourselves that in a weird way, we're taught to ignore. We're taught most of our life as a child, we're too naive. This is what culture might lead us to believe. As a young adult, we don't have it figured out yet. And you find yourself all of a sudden as an adult, and this really important piece of ourselves, the part that knows inherently what's right and wrong for us, and what, more importantly, what we want to be doing with our time, where our love is, where our passion is, where our interest and our curiosity, we're largely taught to trade that in for a map that guides all of us to an average life. It's a map that says, you start here at the red dot and then follow this dotted path. go to this school, get these grades, get this job, and then, you know, you're going to be happily ever after, and happily is in air quotes, because the reality is that map is, that's the map that we're sold, but it's not the map that it doesn't look like that for virtually anyone. And so I think of an intuition as a lot more like a compass, sort of points you in a direction. And while you can't actually see over the ridge, again, a map tells you, oh, I can see the whole journey. But since that map to be a lie, what I think my skill set that I've, this is not a skill I was, that was easy to retrain as, you know, after culture and school and early jobs trained it out of us. It is available to us. It's natural to be able to trust your intuition. And so it's for most people, I find that it's right under the surface, then it's available to you. If you can cultivate your ability to listen to that, both with how you want to spend your time, who you want to spend your time with, and what you want to do, be, or become, life has this way of starting to happen for you rather than to you. Yeah, that's maybe my superpower. And it wasn't, it didn't come easy. I just dropped a new book called Creative Calling. And in that I tell plenty of stories about, I don't want to gold plate this at all. You know, I was hundreds of thousands in debt and student loans. I got years and years, more than a decade off track, pursuing all the things that everybody else wanted for me. But there's hope. If I can figure it out and be that far off track, then it's available to anyone.
So when you figured this out about yourself, that this had been sort of taken from you, this ability that, I agree, I think we all were born with this ability, and it is somehow taught out of us, bred out of us, something by schools or teachers or parents. But from figuring that out about yourself to actually making things happen in your life that could get you out of that predicament you were in, yeah. What kind of time span are we looking at?
Well, I think it's different for different folks. Well, one little asterisk I want to throw in there before we carry on here, which is, you mentioned casually that, you know, before that was taken from you. And I actually think of it as something that we give up, which it makes it even slightly even more frustrating or depressing that we sort of willingly capitulate because, and to be fair, it's not an easy thing to not give up, because these ideas and who we're supposed to be and what we're supposed to do, these ideas, they come from people who care very much about us. They come from our parents and our friends and peers and our career counselors and mentors. And yet what they're talking about is a law of averages. It's if you take this, you'll experience the average life, the average range of emotions, the average. And what we know about averages is it takes a data set, right? You have to add a number of things and then divide by the number. But you are a data set of one. You are your own human. And so I think it's important, a little bit depressing, but important to know that that's why it's always available to you when you do decide, because it's always there. You've just ignored it. You've smashed it down. And so to get to the answer of your question, which was how long does it take and how do you get back to this? The cool thing is that it's largely for most people right under the surface. But now finding that is a little bit of a different task. And that's one of the reasons that I wrote the book. And wherever, let's just say for every person, for every human, and this is virtually true, which is there's a gap between where you find yourself right now, right at this very moment, and where you want to be. And sometimes that gap is really close. Sometimes for many people, it's 10 years or 10,000 hours or 10,000 miles from where you want to be. And that can be frustrating. And the cool thing, anytime that someone talks to me about how hard it is both to tap into that, and then once you decide how to execute against this vision you have for yourself, you're actually, the cool part is you're only one decision away. So you might be 10,000 hours, but as soon as you make the decision to actually tap into that authentic part of yourself, to go looking for it, or if you know what it is, to start to pull on that thread, that is that feeling that I talked about a second ago, where life starts happening for you. And I talk about a lot about this idea of effortless hard work, where when you're doing the hardest things of your life, whether it's finding out who you're supposed to be or jumping through the various hurdles that are required in order for you to get that that badge or to understand or connect with that fulfillment, that when you're doing the thing that you're supposed to be doing, even though it's hard work, you seem to have infinite energy. And there are people out there listening to this right now, like, oh my God, I'm so tired. I think that tired is a symptom of this disconnection, this sort of this gap between where you are right now and where you want to be. And it can sound, especially when you're tired, for like a lot of work to close that gap. But I guess I'm here to tell you from my own experiences and from having hundreds of the world's very top performers on my podcast and from my work as a founder of Creative Live and working with tens of millions of creators, that the cool thing is that we know that this is doable. We have examples all around us of people who have tapped into that. And if you ask them or in deconstructing their success, you find out that this is how it was, that there was a gap and then they decided to lean into the things that they were either curious about or inspired by, or that they knew they wanted and were betraying themselves. And when you do that, the world just accelerates.
So I'm a huge fan and proponent of the gap, and it's actually sort of jumping ahead in our conversation. So I'm going to leave it there for now.
Okay, cool,
We will come back to this. But in there, Chase, you said something fascinating. You said this decision to pursue what it is and to sort of make this change and start trusting yourself. When you're saying this decision, you're not like, the decision isn't like, I'm going to start this business that looks exactly like this. The decision is literally just to start trusting yourself, is it not?
It is. And it's to start moving in a direction. And that's, go back to the compass analogy. Like, if what is clear about a compass is it just, and if you are truly sort of aligned and you've made, quote, the decision is just to start. In the book, I use the analogy of a path. It's just to start to put yourself on the path that you're supposed to be on. And that is sometimes this calling that we have is, it's rarely does it sound like, hey, Chase, I'm over here. I know exactly what I want to do. And I know exactly how to get there. And it's more often like this whisper. And that's why I liken it to a compass, because you can hear it in the distance. And your job as a human is to start walking towards that thing. And along the way, all kinds of stuff's going to happen. And where the call comes from may change. But as soon as you step on that path and start walking towards the thing that you're supposed to be doing, that is where this idea of effortless hard work comes into play. That is where this sort of alignment. And the cool thing is, I don't care who is listening. I don't care if you're running down the boardwalk right now, or you're driving your car, or you're at work at your desk. You know this to be true. You have felt this call. You felt this pull at some point, at some either year or some season in your life or some moment even. You felt exactly what I'm talking about, where you're doing the things that were in line with who you truly are. And you felt free, you felt connected, which is a huge piece of our culture today that's really, really important. You were around people. If you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with, you were around a bunch of people who provided energy for you rather than drained it. And all I'm asking you to do is reconstruct what that was like, what you were doing. And it may be different for you now, but the cool thing is, once you know that feeling, you can feel when you're onto it.
Yeah, and that feeling and then letting it just sort of fade into the distance is probably one of the worst feelings that there are. One of the issues, so like you said, as a human, I mean, making these decisions and following this path, what it does do is it gives you control of your outcome. And I feel, Chase, that people who do take this path, like to me, I want control. Like I want to control the good. I want control of the bad. I want control of what happens to me. But you do give up the fact that you sort of can shove off blame to your boss or to your teachers, or you know what I mean, or your professors, if you are not in control. Once you make this decision to take control, how do you then, as a human, like make wrong decisions and continue to move forward, not back away and like, okay, no, this wasn't for me?
Well, I think there's sort of a phase of understanding. And if you understand what you truly want and you've sort of reconciled this in your heart of hearts, and it doesn't have to be like a light switch. It's like when I say understand, it's like, even let's just say you don't have a clear picture, but you know where your curiosity lies. If you are exploring your curiosity, No one can take that from you. As you said, like the, we like to place blame because it abdicates us from responsibility when we're blaming our the fact that we already have a mortgage or that we have three kids and I don't have the freedom that I need to pursue the thing that I'm put here on this planet to do. And it's really easy to start casting all these sort of these parties or these speed bumps in this negative light. But if you are truly honest and you are walking in the direction of this call that you feel, then again, I mentioned the effortless hard work, but while I would tweak one thing and I wouldn't say you can't actually control the outcome, but it's in controlling the effort that you put toward these things. There's this sort of a welling up inside of you. It's sort of like, it's like the tractor beam in Star Wars, right? It's just like, there's what felt like pushing rocks uphill suddenly feels like momentum. And for anyone, and again, the cool thing is that we've all felt this, even if it was for a moment or a season or some small piece of our life, it really is just going back to the feeling. And this goes back to that my early point of intuition and trusting oneself. We largely walk away from that as a young person, or we give it up willingly because we're taught that intuition is often wrong and you don't know. And the irony to this is that actually rational thought is way more prone to bias. It's way more, it's slow, it's imprecise, it requires duration and calculation versus this innate sense of what feels good to us is virtually instant. And it's a feeling. And the feeling, when we're deciding not just with our head, but with our head and our heart. And to be clear, by head and heart, I mean, it's like, what is it when I say, you know, the concept of a gut feeling? Like, gut feelings are rarely wrong. And it's, I don't want to go too far off the path here and get into the science, but it's like your brain is your RAM, but you have memory throughout your body. And that's why if you don't just, like, if I say, what is it? That's why I call it gut feeling, right? Because you don't feel it in your head. You feel it in your stomach and your chest. And that, to me, that is this intuition. And for everyone who has felt that, when you're in line with that stuff, and we'll call it head, heart, or just intuition. And when you do stumble, it's like, let's go back to the idea of a kid who's an able-bodied child. After the kid falls down trying to walk for like the 208th time, what parent says, well, I guess my kid's not a walker? I mean, it's absurd, right? It's absurd. And yet we do that with so many things. With how many things have you picked up and you've tried them four times? If you can't play the piano and sing like Lady Gaga, or you can't strike a soccer ball like Ronaldo, or you can't like write like Liz Gilbert, then you're like, oh, well, I guess I just don't have what it takes. And yet nothing that is sort of fundamental or foundational to our life that is something like walking, for example, do we ever quit that easy? So when you're doing the thing that you're supposed to be doing and you're actually in line with that head heart, the cool thing is that there's this virtually unlimited energy. And that energy is the energy that when you look to your right and your left and you see people who feel like they've got it figured out, all they've done is they've tapped into that part of them that is in line where their head and heart is aligned and where they are using their innate creativity, their innate sense of themselves, their ability to create outcomes, their ability to create experiences for themselves when they're aligned. It is like this, as I mentioned earlier, it's like a tractor beam instead of pushing a rock up a hill.
Is creativity innate within all of us, or most of us who have had this feeling at least?
Johnny, all you got to do is you got to walk into any first grade classroom, right, and say, who wants to come to the front of the room and draw me a picture? How many hands go up? You've done this. You can at least visualize it. And the answer is 100% of the hands go up. 100%. And you ask the same question of a sixth grade or seventh grade classroom, and then again as a 10th or 12th grade, and it's reduced by 50% each time. And that alone is sort of anecdotal or empirical proof. Of course we're all creative. And creativity, just to be clear, creativity isn't art. it's my goal with the book and the way I want to think and the message I want to spread in the world is creativity does not equal art. Art certainly is a subset of creativity. It's a very powerful way of understanding what creativity is, but creativity is just putting any two ideas together to form something new and useful. So to be clear, we're co-creating this conversation right now, right? We're both contributing and you created your day yesterday. You decided which direction to drive to work or to what to cook for your meal. And if you start to think of creativity with a capital C as like, you're literally like, look around, every single thing around you was created, everything. The desk, the computer, the phone, the pictures on the wall, the experience you had last night at the restaurant, the music that's coming out of the speakers, like literally everything was at first an idea in someone's head and then a drawing and then someone put effort to it. And then there was version one and version two and version three. And you're looking at just like a world of possibility. And so if you can start to think of creativity, not as like drawing and painting and music, those are nice approximations, early, easy ways to connect with creativity. But if you start to go back to your questions, like, is everyone creative? 100%, there's no question. Just look at the definition of creativity and then the fact that we are creating machines as humans. It's literally what differentiates us from every other species on the planet. So of course everyone's creative. But here's, I think, even a more interesting question than is everyone creative is, okay, great, then how do you get more creative? How do you develop it? It's just like a muscle. It's just like a muscle. Maya Angelou said it best. Creativity is an infinite resource. The more you use, the more you have. And if you can think of like, okay, great. Then if I believe that everyone's creative, and that includes me or you listening, and I understand that creativity is a muscle, and like anything, the more I do it, the better I get at it. Why? And you realize that literally everything in the world is created. If you believe one, everyone's creative. You believe two, creativity is a muscle, which none of these things are absurd, right? They're very logical and simple. Then it follows that, okay, great. Then it's only in creating in small daily ways, i.e. developing this muscle, that I have a chance to reconcile and to understand that I can create my life. It's just creativity at a different scale.
And creativity isn't just sitting down writing a book or making a feature film.
No, it's like literally deciding to do something different for dinner tonight, to create. If you've always made the same pasta sauce and you changed it up a little bit, I'm telling you, it's going to feel different and weird. If you decide to drive to work a different way, to create your own route, you're going to see things you wouldn't otherwise see. You're going to experience the world slightly differently. And this is always available to us. That's the cool thing about creativity. It's literally everywhere. We can turn into it, turn it on at a moment's notice. And the cool thing is that for the people that you respect and admire and appreciate their lives, or you're moved by how they move through the world, or I'm telling you that life is intentional. It didn't just happen. Richard Branson didn't just happen to start 400 companies, right? It was intentional. And that intention, the ability to be intentional, the ability to create in small daily ways through cooking and cleaning and writing in your journal and having amazing, interesting conversations, that's available to you immediately. And only through that vehicle do you strengthen your small C creativity muscles and understand the agency that you have over your life. It is like, to me, this is the part that kills me, right? We're not taught any of this. We're taught that pursuing creativity is whimsical and playful, maybe even naive because it's not practical and it's not. And yet every single moment of your life, you're creating it, right? Why wouldn't we empower our kids and hell, the adults? Like, why wouldn't we teach this to teach us to have agency and teach us to not to avoid errors, but to recover quickly from them, to fail and try and experiment? And these are things that are not common in our culture. And yet, when you look at the most successful, and it's important to say fulfilled, the most important, successful and fulfilled people, because there's nothing worse than being successful and unfulfilled, right? That's my definition of hell. But to be fulfilled, like if you ask any of these people, and I've literally had hundreds of them on my podcasts, it was all intentional. They all had a plan.
So this idea of the creativity as a muscle, I think, puts the listener in one of two positions. Either thinking that they aren't creative and you just told them it's a muscle and how to go about building that muscle up. It's just use it and use it and use it, and you will never, you'll never expend all of it. You'll just make more of it. But then there's also just constant ideas and things and just like shiny objects and just like so, and just paralyzed by, I have this feeling, Chase. I have this job I don't like. I have this feeling in my gut that you tell me about, but I don't know what the hell to start. Like, it's just, there's so many opportunities everywhere that I won't do any of them.
You hit the nail on the head. This is so true. And there are a couple more camps than just the two, but I like the binary approach. And it's largely true. And this is true for, especially for people who haven't historically identified as creative. It's like they don't even know where to start. And here's the cool thing. Start anywhere. The only thing you can do wrong is to not start. And most people that don't identify with this or haven't historically identified with this pattern of thinking or don't believe it's available to them, they'll say, okay, great. Well, I work at Microsoft as an engineer, and I really, really, what I want to do is own a chain of like 4 or 5 cafes. And because I love conversation, I want to bring people together. There's a history of like storytelling in my family, and I just love gathering people, convening them. Then, so the first thing the Microsoft engineer might say is like, okay, great. Well, how do I rent a space, and who do I hire, and what's going to be on the menu? And it's like, no. If you want to start a restaurant, you want to, like, listening to the compass looks like, all right, I'm going to bake some scones this Sunday. Like, I'm going to have some people over for coffee at my house, and I'm going to see if I really do enjoy convening people, and if having the best scones in my town is actually something that I can do without all the overhead and the employees and the stores and it's just to get started doing something rather than anything. And that paralysis that you talk about, it's totally realistic. That's why I'm not downplaying it or shrugging off your question. I think it's really real. The cool thing is, once you start to understand this about yourself, I've got a series of personas in the book that maybe you're a noodler or a starter. You start lots of things, but don't finish them. Or you figure out one thing and you noodle it to death and you can't call it done. And once you start to understand these things about yourself, that's the cool thing about the power of knowledge. When you are self-aware that you actually are paralyzed, then the antidote for this, it becomes radically practical. It's just, you literally start doing things, start doing small, whatever, the way I like to think about it is, what's the smallest action that you can take that moves you closer to your dream? What's the smallest possible viable audience that you can serve? We're taught to think big at scale, like in our culture, right? All right. Oh, you want to start a coffee cafe? Well, how is it going to be the next Starbucks? No, start with baking scones on Sunday. This is a weird example that I'm hammering on.
It's a great example.
On Sunday. But, you know, I think conceptually, it's like, it's literally just start. I have a part of the book that I call action over intellect. Again, this goes back to what we're taught to use our brain to think our way out of it. And ultimately, as soon as you start doing something, you'll know if it's for you. Does it feel good? Then do more of it. If it doesn't feel good, then adjust. And we can't actually, we believe that we can rationalize it. We believe we can sit on the couch and think, will I like this? But the science is really clear. We're actually really bad at predicting our future happiness and the action of what will make us happy or not. It's the doing that matters.
I would even extend that a little bit, Chase, and just say that, like, we're terrible at predicting just our future, I think. Yeah. If you had told me 10 years ago that I would be a podcaster going on 500 episodes and interviewing you, I would have laughed in your face, because I was
right.
Building software and doing stuff, and it was cool.
Right. So, and it seemed talked me into it. And then here you are, because you didn't get here. You didn't say, you know what, I want to start a podcast and I'm going to have 500 episodes and I'm going to, as you just articulated, you said, I don't know what this podcasting thing's all about, but it seems interesting. Maybe I can have a conversation with, who is your first guest, Johnny? Who is your first guest?
Chris Brogan.
There you go. And you're like, okay, cool.
I just met him and I was like, I want to interview him.
Right. I have a connection to Chris. Chris is within 100 feet of me right now, or Chris's friend is my friend. And I'm going to turn on a tape recorder. I find Chris inspiring. I read his books. I follow him online. Let's have a conversation. I'm curious. Like, that's how it started. And then, holy smokes, 500 episodes later. But my point is that you, if you were just sitting on the couch going, I wonder what it would be like to interview somebody, someone who I'm inspired by, someone who, like, and you like, there's, you have an infinite capacity for thinking, but if you don't actually put any muscle or any action behind it, where are you going to be in 1, 3, 5, 10 years? You mean exactly where you started. You're going to be on the couch.
Exactly. Exactly. And so this, the opposite, I guess, side of this is then the person just stopped and wondering where to start. I'm going to say is you, Chase. And you, obviously, you have successful business and you have a lot going on. And you have, because of the way you pursue creativity or develop it within yourself, I'm sure you're full of ideas all the time. Plus your inbox and everywhere you go, probably people are telling you, hey, you should do this with me or do this or partner with us. How do you then, through all of that, how do you decide that in 2019, maybe 2018, you started probably, but you were going to write Creative Calling?
Well, what you say is true. There is a lot, there's a lot of distraction and inbound and even curiosity. And that's a skill that I honed to be aware of this. But I am an advocate. I'm going to go, there's two parts to my answer. One hovers around this idea of mastery, which I want to be careful not to over-index on it, because mastery is a word not to be taken lightly. And it really does take 10,000 hours. And I'll just confess that in writing the book, I deleted about 40 pages on mastery because it was starting to feel like a book about mastery. And people who've gone there before, like people like Robert Greene and Tim Ferriss, as you know, talked about the 4-hour work week or the 4-hour chef, really is about learning how to learn. And I was like, okay, I don't want to write a book on mastery, but here's what I do know is that I found something, a thing, photography, that just lit me up and just it like gave me so much energy. And the fact that I was able to get out of my waiting tables job for $2.16 an hour, I made in Steamboat Springs waiting tables, $2.16. And to pursue photography and then to have it be so natural. And of course, again, this effortless idea of effortless hard work, but I was able to, over the course of the next 10 years, say, completely master my craft. I can make any photograph given a certain amount of time and budget. I'm comfortable saying that. And when you've mastered something or come close to mastering it, what you start to understand is what mastery looks like. And then you can deconstruct the things that were very effective in your approach to mastering anything. And I'm talking like that's mastering architecture or how to tune an engine or how to bake a cake or how to write code that has a certain sort of attribute. Like if you are a master, you know the terrain. You don't know everything, but you know you have an awareness of the terrain and you know enough to be able to predict outcomes. And what I like to think about mastery is your gap, your creative gap, the gap between what you see in your mind and what you can make is zero. You can make exactly what you see in your mind. And when I had mastered photography, I suddenly felt this, I felt like I had a cheat code. And this cheat code allowed me to more easily master other things. And even if it wasn't mastering the next thing, I could get myself 80% of the way there with 20% of the effort that I had expended to do it in photography. Because you understand there's some metaphors, there's some consistency between, okay, well, how did I find success in photography? Well, I hung around these sorts of people. I went to these places. I read this material. And you start to be able to ferret out what matters and what doesn't in any discipline. And so I love the idea of focusing and getting really, really good at something. I did that with photography and was my hope to then lift and stamp that into a couple different areas of my life. One was in technology. The first thing I did after sort of mastering photography was like, okay, cool. I'm going to do a photo app. And this is, I have a vision of what it could be like tell me if this sounds familiar, to take a picture and then add an effect with the thing we'll call a filter And then I want to be able to share it to social networks. And so in 2009, I did the first photo app that shared images to social networks. It was called Best Camera, and it was the app of the year on the Apple, on the iTunes platform, and millions of copies. And this is back when apps were whatever, $3 or $4. And it was a direct relationship, direct connection from understanding and mastering photography. And then saying, how would I, if I thought about developing the first iPhone app that shared photos to social networks, if I thought about that through the lens of what I know about photography, how would I do it? And it found great success. And there's the flip side of the same coin. It was also my biggest public failure, which you'll have to read the book, because that's too long of a story here. But, and then I did the same thing with a couple other things, with Creative Live, for example. And so I've tried to do the same thing with the book, which is, this is my third book, but my first real book, like with words. All of my books before have been photographic books. And this one's about creativity. And again, I'm super happy with the results, but it did take me 2 years. And when you have mastered something and you've mastered the ability to listen to that intuition, it was clear to me that I had to write a book, because these ideas were complex enough, but there's a pop culture package that is a very familiar package to people. This is how ideas travel. I had written 1,000 blog posts. I had a practice of journaling every morning, and it needed to be a book. And I mean, again, that I was right and focused my energy appropriately. I mean, it went, you know, it was a national bestseller basically the first week it came out. So I think this is this combination of understanding who we are at our core, and then what piques our interest, and then being willing to apply a disproportionate effort in an area that we're passionate about. And not surprisingly, it creates results when you're working on the things that you're excited about. And right now there's so many people at home are like, oh my God, like they either think I'm crazy, or which is fine, don't get the book, or damn, it makes too much sense that if you do things that you're good at, or that you find joy in doing, and that is going to create this sort of momentum. And there's a curious thing about momentum, which is not only do you feel it, does it feel good? Do you get results? Are you inspired to work? But here's the cool thing, is that other people feel it too. I mean, you've been around people that are just lit up. They're just so psyched about what they're doing and how they move through the world, and it's infectious, right? So a cool byproduct is that the world starts conspiring to help you in your vision for this one. And these are people that maybe were dubious before. That's why I go to the idea of show, don't tell. If you want to change careers, don't just come home and tell your partner or spouse that, hey, I'm doing a 180. I know we've got kids and a mortgage and all this stuff, but I'm quitting my job and doing this. What if you just started doing it on the side? And when someone watches you get so lit up, especially someone close to you doing this thing, they're going to be the ones that are saying, gosh, why don't you do more of that? Because I see how much joy it brings you. This is the people around you. The world starts to help you.
I love it. I love it. As I said to you, Chase, before we started, I'm halfway through the book, and I recommend it to everybody. It is fascinating, whether you consider yourself creative already or not. But the idea of like establishing this daily practice just for your work and life, and
simple. Anything,
yeah. Right?
It's simple. There's a simplicity with which I think that there's a simplicity and a practicality. We're taught that these things are naive and whimsical. And I don't know, man, the last time I checked, like, again, look around, like what was created? Oh, everything. Like, so this ability for us to create not just things, but outcomes in our life, like it is a foundation to build off of. So it's, again, for those people who are dubious, my favorite thing is seeing the people who didn't necessarily identify as creators. Like, I knew I was going to get people who are like, I'm creative, and yo, that dude's, I'm in my, he's in my tribe. He gets me. But I've been most excited about the people who were like, huh, I call them creative curious. They're like, there might be something here. I'm not quite sure what it is, but I'm willing to put my toe in the water. It's been fun to hook those people. So
awesome. It's been a fascinating conversation, Chase. I don't want to keep you much longer, so I would love to wrap up on one final question if I could.
Oh, please, let's do it.
So like I said earlier, it's this idea I'm working with, the entrepreneurial gap, which you pretty much explained, but it's after talking to hundreds of creatives and entrepreneurs creating things, we do live in this gap where no matter what we accomplish, we never personally see ourselves as successful because there's always more to hit. I agree that that's necessary, and I see that in myself. But rather than looking forward just for the next couple of minutes, Chase, I would love it if you would stop and turn around and look behind you. We've talked about your business. We've talked about what you've done, but I'm sure we haven't covered nearly all the highs, lows, wins, and losses. But rather than looking forward, can you tell me, how do you feel about this entire journey up until this very moment?
It's a good question. I was immediately awash with like the profundity of it. It's, and at the same time, it's like you're just putting your pants on one leg at a time and you're just taking one step. But what I have come to appreciate is the meaning that comes into our lives from doing meaningful things, doing things that we actually care about, that with intention. And I think we all have to wander. Like, that's a really important part of the book, that it's like a lot of books that I read or stories that I hear are like, oh, perfect person A took perfect attribute B, C, and D, and then made this perfect thing. And this is, business books do this all the time. It's like, I don't know about you, but my life is messy and complicated. And as I look backwards, it's anything but a straight path. I told you earlier, I've been 10 years off track, hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. And to have found a way to make sense of it, and more than just sort of tolerate it, but to find meaning. And I think this is a goal of the book. It's not about making a piece of art that is a masterpiece. It's about making a masterpiece of your life. And meaning is at the core of all of that. And when I found that part of myself that we're taught to ignore or to not trust, and I started trusting it, and I started believing that it might not be pretty, but it's me. It might not be easy, but what else have I got to do? And if I'm going to put work in, I might as well put work in doing something that I love. All of those things contributed to meaning. And at the end of our life, I think that's really what we're seeking. And if, speaking of end of life, like if you, the number one regret of the dying, this is not number four or number 10, and this is not some stuff I'm pulling out of my butt. This is science. The number one regret of the dying is that they lived the life according to somebody else's rules, that they did things that other people prescribed. And I'm unwilling to be on my deathbed and do that. So when I look backwards, I see plenty of struggle, and it's not at all a straight line. But when I figured out that part, when I became just self enough aware, when my self-confidence was one click above my shame and my fear, that thing started to happen. And that's the cool thing, is it's just one click. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to be the most confident person or the least fearful, or the, just has to be one click more than your shame and your fear.
Absolutely love it. Absolutely love it. And that fear of being on your deathbed and regretting living someone else's life or not having done things, if that doesn't push you every single day, I know when I first heard that, it's like I just had goosebumps, and it was like, you know, just there's no way.
Unwilling to trade it. And we lose sight of it. I also don't want to, like, I don't want to say that I have the perfect crystal clear vision every day. It can get murky. And ironically, in writing the book, I got blocked many times. And I mean, talk about a meta. I'm writing a book about creativity where I'm supposed to be a master and I'm getting blocked. And it's like, hey, dummy, you know, go back 45 pages and read what you wrote 4 weeks ago. And you're like, oh, so it is a messy process, but it's all we've got.
I love it. I love it. I love it. Creativecalling.com is the book website. Yep. You can track it down there or anywhere that you buy books, online or off. It is there. It's Creative Calling with Chase Jarvis. ChaseJarvis.com is his personal site where you can track him down, and Creative Live is the business.
Yeah. Go check out Creative Live. It's where 10 million people learn this stuff. And I'd love to get the book in as many hands as possible. And I'm super attuned to online stuff. So if you tag me or hashtag Creative Calling or whatever, I'll see it. And I'm dying to hear what people in your community think. And I want to say thanks for building a cool community. I mean, however many episodes you say you're 500 in, like you have some mutual friends and it's really cool to be able to be on the show and to meet you and keep doing what you're doing. It's crazy inspiring. And it's been a treat to be on the show.
Thank you so much, Chase. I truly, truly appreciate it. All right. Well, that was a lot of fun. And I have to say that there are sometimes there's interviews I get to do that I'm very much looking forward to in ways just because I've been noticing or following the person for a long time and what they've been up to. Chase is one of these people. And then there's this whole other group of interviews that I get to do where I am really looking forward to the conversation. And then it still takes another turn and actually sort of steps it up to be even better than I was expecting. And this conversation with Chase was one of those. I really, really loved having it. We sort of veered off further than we sometimes do on the show, but sometimes it just needs to be done. And I think that it's worth it. And I hope that you agree. You're welcome to track me down somewhere and tell me if you don't, or if you do, that would be cool. But this is one of those conversations. And so there was a lot said and we covered a lot and we went deep into some things. And so as much as it was fun to be part of the conversation, now I have that job of going back through the conversation, and I have to pick out just one thing from the many that Chase said. It's not easy, but I think I'm up to the task. Are you ready? All right, let's do it. Let's find the hack.
The cool part is you're only one decision away. So you might be 10,000 hours, but as soon as you make the decision to actually tap into that authentic part of yourself, to go looking for it, or if you know what it is, to start to pull on that thread, that is that feeling that I talked about a second ago where life starts happening for you.
And that's the hack. Chase. Man, I love this. I love this. And I hope that you out there, I hope this resonated with you. I hope this connected. I hope if you've been waiting to make that decision, that Chase's words will help you, or Chase's book, if that's what it takes, or whatever it is. But it's literally just making that decision, which can be evolved right now as you're sitting in your car, as you're on your way to work, as you're at the gym. You can make that decision to start tapping into that part of you, the part of you that wants to, I guess, live deliberately rather than having life sort of thrown at you. And yes, we're not saying that it happens like that. Chase says it might take you 10,000 hours, but it starts with that decision. And the thing I really like about this sort of mindset is that I know when we set goals, when we want to start something, when we want to be somewhere where we're not, it always seems further away than it is. It always seems that if it's going to take me 3 years to start this idea and build it into a sustainable full-time business, that it's going to take me 3 years, say. And that seems like a long time. And it is when we're looking forward. But just think looking back to 3 years ago, and it seems like it just went by in the blink of an eye. And so it's that decision that Chase talks about to start taking incremental steps to move forward, because it doesn't matter whether you decide to today or not. 1 year, 2 years, and 3 years are going to pass, and it's better to have made the decision and started. Chase, thank you so very, very much. All right, so Creative Calling is the book. I highly, highly, highly recommend it. You can get it straight creativecalling.com if you want to go check out his site, or Amazon, anywhere you buy books, that's where you can get it, online or off. It is a bestseller, and it should be. He's somebody who understands creativity, and this act of creating the daily practices of creativity that this book teaches you is something that we can all use, whether we consider ourselves creative already or not. It's just, it is a practice that getting the insights from somebody like Chase is invaluable. So I highly, highly recommend it. I'll link to everything in the show notes. So at hacktheentrepreneur.com, you can track down under the podcast, you'll see Chase, and I'll link to the Creative Calling, Chase Jarvis's personal site, Creative Live, if you wish. And that wraps it up. I thank you once again so much. I hope you did enjoy that nearly as much as I did. And we've got lots of amazing guests coming your way, so stay tuned. But until then, please keep hacking the entrepreneur. We'll be right back.